I'll share with you an interesting halachic situation that comes up almost every year. Because I'm a Rebbe in Hakota, one of my jobs is to go to America and to meet some of the 12th grade boys and try to drum up some interest and try my best to get them excited to come. And almost every year, without doubt, I either end up flying to America on Hanukkah or flying back on Hanukkah, depending on how lucky my wife is. Usually she prefers me to leave day 8, opposed to kind of return on day 2, to miss the first night with the kids. That's not good for the Shalom Bayis. But what the Shiloh that comes up a lot is, what do you do in terms of lighting candles on Hanukkah? On the airplane. So I'm not going to discuss in detail the classic Shiloh, which would be, should I light candles? Lighting the flame would for sure be a bad idea. I can't imagine anyone thinks that would be a safe, good idea. But what Poskim often say is, instead you should light some type of candles, like out of lights. So let's say you have like mamish light bulbs. That would probably be the best thing to do. One time I was on an airplane, and I lit a flashlight, which was my one candle. And as we'll see momentarily, that's actually legitimate. One alone is good enough. We'll see in one second, there's actually three levels of the mitzvah. We'll read inside the Gemara momentarily. The Gemara says the bare minimum is one candle per house. The second level is one candle per night. And the third level is this whole increasing one night as we go on. We'll see that inside very soon. But one candle, if I was stuck, is good enough. So I lit my one candle, and a very nice Chabad gentleman came over, and he said, if you'd like, you want to fulfill the mitzvah to the higher level, to the Mahadran. And the Mahadran, he has some type of electric light up, something or other, and he'll let me light it, and I'll hang on to it for half, well, exactly several years back already. And I was curious, if I were to take his light after I had already lit, would I make a bracha on it? Interesting halachic question. Would you make a bracha on such a situation? You follow that? Again, if I have intention to light one candle, and then my wife is bringing the, you know, we ran out of candles, she's bringing them up from upstairs for the neighbor, and I plan on lighting a few seconds later, that's not my question. My question is, I had intention only to light one candle. I thought I was finished. And then someone came along. Would I make a new bracha? Again, the first case, you know, okay, good. So the answer, says the Mishnah Berurah, it's a machlokas actually in the Gedolei HaAchronim. According to the Beis Yosef, the implication is you wouldn't. The Prima Gadim says no. So I'm sitting there on the airplane. I didn't know this at the time. The Chabad guy walks over with a great resolution that I could fulfill the mitzvah as best as possible. Should I make a bracha? The answer is it's a machlokas, the Beis Yosef in the Prima Gadim. What I'd like to do before we even get to Halach Lamaisa, bottom line, is discuss a little bit about where this is coming from. Why would the Beis Yosef think, yes, you should, in fact, have another bracha? And why would the Prima Gadim say no? Kind of like get into their heads for a moment. In other words, when I was younger, I remember thinking to myself, like the whole halachic system, one rabbi says yes, one says no. Is it just like flipping coins? Ah, mutter, tameh, yasser, mutter, chayev, pater. What I'd like to do is try to show a little bit about what's going on behind the issues and explain the shita for the Beis Yosef, explain the Prima Gadim, and understand not just what they say, but really where they're coming from. In yeshivas, often this is considered like brisker type of style. That's what the briskers are known for doing, not just quoting the halacha, but really getting into the guts of it, where it's coming from. So with that in mind, let's take a look at some of the background information. And with the background information, I think we'll be able to return and understand this machlokas de Beis Yosef in the Prima Gadim. Clear? Questions? Okay. Take a look in source number one. If you have the sheet, it's really, I think, on the first page after these line pages. It says, candle lighting, a brisker approach. Then it says my name. And then it says source number one. Source number one is a Gemara Masechet Shabbos on Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Beis. The Gemara quotes a braisa that says, "Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, mitzvahs ner Chanukah ner ishu beiso." As we pointed out a moment ago, the bare minimum. Chanukah is a unique mitzvah. Most mitzvahs you don't have the option to do it high level, lower level, medium level, right? You've never seen in your life where someone says, "Okay, lift up a lulav." But if you really want to do it nicer, lift up a lulav and an esrog. And if you really, really want to one step up, take it with a hadas. So there's an anomaly here. It's a unique situation only by Megillah, only by Neres Chanukah. Why? We're going to leave that question for another event, but that's the idea. The bare minimum is mitzvah Chanukah ner ishu beisa. However, v'hamahadrin, if you want to do level number two, not just level number one, but level number two, v'hamahadrin, ner l'kol echad v'echad. Every single person lights a candle, regardless of the night. So if it's the fifth night and there are 20 people, there should be 20 candles. If it's the eighth night and there's one person, one candle. We don't take into account the number of nights. We take into account only in level number two, in Mahadrin, only the number of people. And here's where the fun begins, or here's where the confusion, which we'll have to unpack and clarify, begins. Here comes level number three, the ones that were commonly found in all of our houses. Almost everyone I know does level number three, as you'll see. V'amahadrin min mahadrin. Let's say you want to do level number three, the highest level, Mahadrin min mahadrin, you want to accomplish. So Beis Shammai Omrim Yom Risho Madlik Shmona Mikan Velech Poches Vaholech. Beis Shammai says you do eight the first night, seven the second night, six, five, four, three, two, one. The inverse of what we do. And that shouldn't surprise you because we hardly ever follow Shitas Beis Shammai. However, Ubeis Hillel Omrim Yom Rishon Madlik Achas Mikan Ve'elech Mosif Vaholech. Says Beis Hillel, and this is what our common practice is, the first night we do one candle, the second two, the third three, four, five, six, seven, and on the eighth night there are eight candles. That I think is the standard practice of what people are doing. The reason why, if you're on an airplane and you can't do the highest level because you're going to burn down the whole plane, or you don't have enough, you know, flashlights to hold them for whatever. Okay, so I did one. What's unclear about this Gemara is whether or not level number three is built off of level number two or built off of level number one. In other words, level number one is one candle. Level number two, you take into account the number of people. Is level number three built off of level number two, in which case it would take into account two things? One is the number of nights. Two is the number of people. And just to make that simpler, you'll see that's the Ashkenazi practice, that every single person has their own. In America, they call it menorah, and here they call it Chanukiah. Everyone has their own set of candles. I have one, my wife has one, my oldest son has one, my next daughter. We have six kids in our family. We have eight different, we talk in English in our family, menorahs. And each one gets their own because we take into account both level three, takes into account level number two as well. It's not just a number of candles per night, it's also per person. However, Sfardim have the other practice, which would be level number three is not built off of level number two. It's a different way to build off of level number one, in which case you have the number of candles per night, but not per person. We'll see in a second. It's actually a machlokas, and we've shown him how to read this Gemara. But it should not surprise you. The Ashkenazi practice is each kid, each person in the family has a menorah. The Sephardi tradition is that there's one menorah per household, per family. Really per household, even per family. But correct. Why? Because again, when the Gemara says it's level number one, that's one candle. Level number two takes into account per person. Does level number three take into account both two and another component? Ashkenazi practice, per night and per person. Or Sephardi practice, no. That would get too confusing. Let's just, Chazal constructed the mitzvah differently, where level number three would only take into account the number of nights, ignoring the number of people. Let me show you that inside, in sources number two and three. It's actually a machlokas between Tosfos and the Rambam, and surprisingly, and actually uncharacteristically, for some reason Sephardim follow Tosfot here, who's one of the Ashkenazic Rishonim, and Ashkenazim follow the Rambam, who's really one of the Sephardic Rishonim, at least almost perfectly. You'll see there's a small, very important nuance, but that does seem to be the practice. I guess people who are studying the history of halacha will wonder how everything got mixed up on its head, but for the meantime, we'll just read the opinions. Take a look in source number two. When Tosfos explains this, v'hamahadrin min hamahadrin, level number three, he says, and this is going to be the Sephardi practice, so just give you the mindset. Nira Lari, it seems according to the Ri, who's one of the major members of Tosfo, debate Shame obeyed Hillel lo kaimi ella aner ishu beiso. Level number three builds off of level number one, circumventing and ignoring level number two. Doesn't take into account at all the number of people. Shekein yesh yoter hider. Why would you do it that way? Because it's more hider that way. Deika hekera, because it's more noticeable. It's more noticeable when you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. An Ashkenazi family, you have all the candles together. There's 20 candles. You don't know if it's the four people, it's the fifth night, four people, you know, two people, the second night, 10 people. It can be a little bit of a mess. So while Sephardim prefer clarity and communication of the candles over taking into account level number two. Avalim osen ner l'kol echad afilu Yosef mikan ve'elech l'kehekera she'ez b'shakach yish b'nei adam abayis. If you don't do it this way, argues Tosfos, and this is Sephardi practice again, they'll be on clarity, and we'd rather have it be clear than take into account level number two, the number of people in the house. Ashkenazim follow the Rambam, who takes into account the number of people in the house, less careful about clarity and avoiding confusion. And you can see where that machloket boils down to, like what that machloket is about. Take a look in source number three, says the Rambam. Halacha Aleph in source number three. In Hilchas Megillah v'Chanukah, Parak Gimel, Halacha Aleph. I mentioned parenthetically, it is surprising that the Rambam puts Megillah and Chanukah together. I would have put Halacha's Megillah set in one place and Chanukah in another place. Okay, that's food for thought for some other point in time. Says the Rambam in Halacha Aleph, Kamaneros hu madlik b'Chanukah, how many candles do you light on Chanukah? Mitzvah sheshia kol bayis hu bayis madlik ner echad. Says the Rambam, level number one is one candle regardless of whether there are a house full of people, the whole family's over for a big Hanukkah party, or one person. And if you want to do level number two, you take into account the number of people. And here comes level number three. V'hamahadrin yoter alze v'oseh mitzvah min amuvchar. Now, it's a little tricky. You'll see why. First of all, right? Madlik ner l'kol echad v'echad b'layla harishan mosevelech b'chol layla v'layla ner echad. You take into account the number of nights. And now the Rambam's going to tell you first what he thinks makes sense, which is actually shita sato, and then he's going to tell you what the minhag is. Take a look in Halacha Beis and Halacha Gimel. Kate said, Harish hayu anshei habayis asar. If there's 10 people in the house, balayla harishon madlik asar neros. If there's 10 people, there should be 10 candles. Balel sheni esrim uvalel shlishi shloshim ad shenimtza madlik balel shmini shmonim neros. Which is exactly the Ashkenazic practice. If you have 10 people the first night, 10 candles. If there's 10 people the last night, then there are 80 candles. And then the Rambam says, even though that's what the halacha should be, the Sephardi practice, even in the Rambam's days, was otherwise. And he writes in Halacha Gimel Minhag Pashit, Bechol Ayreinu Besfard, in Spain, in the Sephardi countries, Shayu Kol Anshe Abayis Madlikim Ner Echad Balayl Harishon Vesifim Holchin Ner Bechol Ayla Valayla Achinim Samadlik Bishmini Shmona Neros Bein Shu Anshe Abayis Merubim Ubein Shaya Adam Echad. So what we've seen until now is basically three main things: the Gemara, Tosfos, and the Rambam. Just to quickly review, and we'll talk about Halacha L'maisa momentarily. Let me quickly summarize, in case you missed the point. We'll take a round of questions in case it's necessary, and then we'll start getting into nuances, which is going to build towards our machlokes between the Beis Yosef and the Prima Gadim. Point number one is the Gemara. The Gemara says there are three levels of how to light them to fulfill the mitzvah. Level number one is one candle, period. Level number two is one candle per night. So the third night you would light three candles regardless of how many people are in the house. Pardon me, the other way around. The second night you light, number of people in the house regardless of the night. Level number two is if it's level number three is you start going up and going down. Beit Shammai says down, we don't follow Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel says up, you go one the first night, two the second, three the third, etc., etc. For Sephardim, that's per household. While for Ashkenazim, that is per person. So I guess point number one is the Gemara, point number two is the Sephardim, point number three is the Ashkenazim. Those are the three points we have. Let's take a look in the Shulchan Aruch, source number four, Halacha L'maaseh, but first questions. Yeah. Like, meaning, it's an excellent question. That is the practice for Ashkenazim. Ashkenazim, the idea would be Mahajim. Oh, you mean eight per every night? It's interesting. I guess the answer would be, it's a good question. I guess the answer is there's a value in showing distinction between each night or building towards something. I mean, if you know, I guess the value of building, what? Well, Shammai goes decreasing, which shows, I guess, individuality. But you're right. Shammai is a little more surprising. Intuitively, Beit Hillel shows like each, and if you think about it, they found the miracle. You know, they found a little bit of oil. The fact that it burnt the first day was not so surprising. The second day was a miracle, a bigger miracle, almost like every day was a bigger and bigger, bigger miracle. That's probably Hillel's opinion. Beit Shammai would probably say it's probably the same level of miracle days 2 through 8. And let's start celebrating with the greatest excitement, work our way down as it kind of gets more and more natural or something or other. I'd have to think about Hillel and Shammai a little more. You know, that's my gut, my knee-jerk reaction to your question. It's a good question. Hillel, I understand very well. And Shammai, I gave you the best I got without having put too much thought into it. I think we said it's not bad, but yeah, hey.
I would guess, like, the Rambam, that the 100 meet a 100 and builds on the 100.
Right.
Are there other cases that those
don't? It's a great question. Yeah, meaning, like, the Rambam is a little bit surprised. Right. The Rambam does make sense. I think that's our knee-jerk reaction. Intuitively, I thought so as well. I think Tosfos explains that once you start having a lot of candles, although it's not that he rejects fundamentally level number 2, he just thinks the unclarity would offset that value. Is there any precedence for it? It's really tough to find precedence at all because it's almost impossible to find another mitzvah which is constructed. Well, choose how you want to do it in level 1, 2, or 3. Usually, Chazal tell you, here's the way to do it, and that's just what you do. It's a surprising anomaly and tough to find precedence for, but the question is a very good one. Okay, halacha l'maisa. Take a look in the Shulchan Aruch, and we'll notice how Sfardim, where they get their practice from Ashkenazim, and when we read the Shita of the Ramah, we're going to read it a little bit carefully, and we'll notice even though many people as great as the Taz claim that the Ashkenazim, the Ramah, who's the Ashkenazi posek, follows the Rambam, and the Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch, follows Tosfos. If you read it carefully, there are people who came after the Taz who says there's a nuance of difference. And if you read it carefully, you'll notice something fascinating, which will really build into where we're going. Kama Neros Madlik. How many candles should one light? Balayla Harishon Madlik Echad. The first night one. Mikan Ve'elech Mosif Aholech. And every night on, you continue counting. Echad B'chol Layla Ad Shebalel Ha'achron Yishmona. Vafilu Ha'im Rabim B'nei Bayit. Lo yadliku yoter. Exactly as Sfardi practice, 1 the first night, 2 the second night, 3 the third, even if there's a lot of people, per family, per household, per house. Haga. And the Ramah now comments. V'yesh omrim, he says, however, d'chol echad mibnei habayis yadlik. V'chein ha-minik pasha. He quotes the Rambam to say, or he quotes, someone puts in the word Rambam to say, it's not per household, but rather it's per person. Per person. I have till 10 o'clock, right? Mm-hmm. Perfect. Good. Just making sure. Time myself properly. Many people point that if you look at the Ramah and you look at the Rambam, they're very similar, but there's a nuance of difference. It's true they would both have 80 candles on the 8th night if there are 10 people in the house. But Ashkenazim seem to follow the Ramah's practice and not the Rambam's practice. And let me show you what I'm talking about. The Ramah writes, V'yeshomrim, again, dekol echad mibnei habayis yadlik. Who does all the lighting in Ashkenazi families according to the Ramah? Each individual person, I light my wife then lights hers, then my son, then my daughter, my son, my daughter. However, if you look carefully at the Rambam, you don't get the impression each individual person is lighting themselves. You get the impression one person is lighting for everyone. If you look back to the Rambam, back to Halacha, let's say Halacha Beis, Ketzad Harishahayu Anshe Abayis Asar, if there's 10 people, Balayl Harishon Madlik Asara Neirot, Madlik sounds like one person's lighting for everyone. And therefore, it's really like 3 shitas, not 2. One is the classic Sephardi Shita, but within the Ashkenazi world, there seem to be 2 approaches, kind of like a B1 and a B2. Let's say Sephardim and the Tosfos is Shita number 1, 1 menorah, 1 chanukiah per household, but Ashkenazim, it's per person, but there's 2 ways of looking at it per person. Is that each individual person lights their own 8, which is a classic practice in the Ashkenazi tradition of the Ramah. But the question one may wonder is, where in the world does the Rambam get this from? Why would the Rambam believe that one person is lighting for all 80 people? It would certainly be a lot of work. But why not just let each person light themselves? So this is a question that the Brisker Rav, Ravel Velasalevichik, otherwise known as the Griz, Gaon Rav Yitzchak Zev, the Brisker Rav offers a fascinating insight into this equation. It's a little bit confusing. I'll try my best to be as clear as possible, and it requires a little bit of background based upon something his own grandfather said. His grandfather was the Beis Halevi. So this is Rav Yitzchak Zev Halevi Salavechik, quoting his grandfather of Yosef Dov Halevi Salavechik, who we're often familiar with as the Rav. It's the Rav's great-grandfather, but the Rav's uncle and the Rav's great-grandfather sharing this Torah. So the Brisker Rav says, if you want to really understand this machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramah, kind of B1 and B2, the nuances, the difference between two Ashkenazi practices, you have to look at a foreign topic which seemingly has no relevance at all, and then we'll return to it. So we're kind of on a tangent, a detour to a detour. Our question was the Beis Yosef and the Prima Gadim. We took a detour to look at the Rambam and Ramah, and in order to understand the Rambam and Ramah, the Brisker Rav's taking us to a detour to the Beis Halevi. Now, I'm not going to get into the details for a few reasons, mostly because I don't know that much about Bris Milah, but there is a discussion out there about Bris Milah, which the Brisker Rav thinks is very relevant based upon his grandfather's insights. If, let's say, a person, the Moel, does the Bris Milah, and then he's finished, and he wants to go back and fix up a little bit. He finishes, and he wants to go back and add more, but it'll cause cutting and bleeding and whatnot. You're not allowed to cut another Jew. Are you allowed to go back and fix up that Bris Milah, assuming it's not a health issue, it's not a, right? That's a discussion. So the seems to be a machlokas between the Rambam versus the Tur and Ramah. According to the Rambam, the Moel should not go back and fix it up. He did a good job, it's done. And according to the Ramah and the Tur, you can go back and fix it up so long as it's not Shabbos. Why not on Shabbos? Now let him do a malacha on Shabbos. And even though you can do a bris on Shabbos, you cannot do post-bris extra amending on Shabbos. Interesting machloket. These days, the Moelim, I think they do a good job. I've never even heard of such a case that comes up. But I don't know, hypothetically, if the Moel wants to go back and fix a little bit more once he has clearly finished, would he be able to go back and do so? The Rambam, no. And according to the Tur and the Ramah, yes. How are we doing so far? So good? So the Beis Halevi says, you want to know what this really boils down to? Why should you be allowed to go back? Why should you not? So the Beis Halevi has a fascinating insight. He says there's two ways of looking at the mitzvah of hiddur mitzvah. Hiddur mitzvah means beautifying, improving. So if let's say a person wants to light Shabbos candles, but they want to light beautiful Shabbos candles, that's called hiddur mitzvah. If a person wants to eat a crummy piece of matzah, that's fine, but a beautiful piece of matzah is hiddur mitzvah. If a person wants to perform the mitzvah in with a nicer sukkah or whatever the thing would be, the nicer you do the mitzvah, we always try to do nice mitzvahs, and that's called hiddur mitzvah, improving it. So now the Moel wants to go back and add in hiddur to his bris milah. So the Beis Halevi says there's two ways of looking at his hiddur mitzvah. If you bring yourself back to, let's say, like, you know, Kita Gimel, and back you had a teacher, and the teacher would do a good job, you get a check. Sometimes you get a check plus. There's a discussion out there as to whether or not hiddur mitzvah is a check plus or two checks. And let me explain what I mean by that. If let's say I want to fulfill a mitzvah called, I don't know what, any mitzvah in the world, I don't know. Arba Minim. It's actually a little tricky. You chose an excellent example, but also a tricky one. I put on tefillin this morning. I want to put on tefillin. You want to light Shabbos candles. If you do the mitzvah of Shabbos candles, that's obviously a mitzvah. Let's say if you do hiddur mitzvah to your Shabbos candles. Did you do two mitzvahs? Or did you, right, two checks? Or did you get a check plus? Almost like an enhancement of the original mitzvah. So you can see it in either way. You could imagine it a check plus, but you could also imagine it as two separate mitzvahs. The Beis Halevi says it's an interesting question. Is hiddur mitzvah a separate mitzvah? In which case, I got the mitzvah of Chanukah, the mitzvah of hiddur, the mitzvah of Dalet Minim, the mitzvah of hiddur, the mitzvah of tefillin, the mitzvah of hiddur, the mitzvah of Ne'er Shabbos, the mitzvah of hiddur, the mitzvah of matzah, every one of those are two. Or did I get five check pluses? I got an enhanced, enriched, improved mitzvah of matzah, an enhanced, enriched, improved mitzvah of Ne'er Shabbos or of tefillin or whatever it is. interesting question. Now, it sounds like intellectual, theoretical mumbo-jumbo, but says the Beis Halevi, there's a fundamental difference. Because if it's a check plus, if it's an enriching, enhancing of the mitzvah, and not a separate mitzvah, you cannot do that after the mitzvah is complete. You can't improve something once it's done. What's done is done. That boat has sailed. That ship has sailed. However, argues the Beis Halevi, if it's a separate mitzvah, just because you finished the first mitzvah doesn't mean that you can no longer add hiddur. And therefore, the Beis Halevi says there's two ways of looking at hiddur mitzvah. One way, which is it's a separate mitzvah that you can add in afterwards. And the other way is to suggest it's not a separate mitzvah. It's part and parcel of the original mitzvah. It enhances, it enriches, it's a check plus. In which case, you cannot add in hiddur afterwards. Let me make sure that was clear, because that's a little bit confusing, but I hope people got it. Should I say that again? I'll say it again. Sure. The Beis Halevi has two different ways of looking at hiddur mitzvah, and there's a fundamental difference between them, a practical halachic difference. I'll start off with the practical difference. Once a person is done with the mitzvah, can they improve or do hiddur afterwards? I shouldn't use the word improve. Can a person do hiddur mitzvah after it's lit? For example, let's say a person fulfills the mitzvah of lulav. They lifted up a lulav and they see a beautiful lulav afterwards. If they would lift it up afterwards, would there be any value or not? Maybe a person would say, no, you fulfilled the mitzvah. You can no longer enhance or enrich a mitzvah because you already finished it. You did it. Alternatively, one may argue, hiddur mitzvah is an independent concept. It's a separate mitzvah, and it doesn't have to be connected to the original mitzvah. If that would be the case, maybe lifting up a second lulav afterward would be a fulfillment not of lulav, but a fulfillment of hiddur mitzvah. Here's the major question. Can one add hiddur mitzvah after they've completed the mitzvah? My intuition would have been no. But says the Beis Halevi, it's actually not so clear. You can view it in either way. And he explains, this would be the machlokes between the Rambam versus the Torah and Ramah regarding Pris Mila. If the Moel finishes and he's done, you can't go back and add anything ever because it's just unnecessary cutting. That's the Rambam. But according to the Ramah and the Tor, you could go back and do extra fixing it up. Why? Just because you're finished doesn't mean you're done with hiddur. You can still do hiddur even after the bris milah is done. Okay, maybe not on Shabbos because that's not docha Shabbos. But that would be exactly what's at the root of this machloket between the Beis Halevi. Pardon me, the Beis Halevi explains it. The root of machloket between the Rambam versus the Tor and the Ramah. Oh, hold on to that. We'll get to that. You might not. I could see why you would think yes, but there may be no bracha on hiddur mitzvah most of the time. But we'll get there. It's a great point. We'll think it through as we move along. Yeah. It's very uncommon to do it after the mitzvah. That's very uncommon. But when we're actually doing the mitzvah, it's much more common. I know many people who went out and bought beautiful Shabbos candles. I know many people who buy really nice lulavim or a beautiful tefillin or extra nice matzah. There's a lot of mitzvahs that people try to do while they're doing it that way. It's uncommon to add in hiddur afterwards. The question, is it halachically possible? That's the Beis Halevi's question. Yeah. It's a tricky question. Sukkah, maybe every time you go into the sukkah is a different mitzvah, in which case it may be a little different. This would be more like, I'm not sure how it would play out in sukkah. I have to really sit and think about it because I'm not sure how you would, I don't know, maybe you would add in a beautify the sukkah once you left. I don't even know if that would, it's difficult because that would probably beautify the sukkah, not the sitting in the sukkah. It'd be a difficult thing to play, to think it through. I'm not sure you can apply it there. I just don't see how it would play out, but it's a fascinating thing to think about. Maybe we'll think about it a little more afterwards. Yeah. I'm not sure that's hiddur as much as it is. It's probably something else, like minhagim of lighting for all your children or something like that. It's probably a separate category. I'll have to think about that a little more also. Right, yeah. I think
you know that if a person is coming close to Shabbos, they always say, light two.
Right, that's for sure the case. But that might not be because, right, it's certainly better to light two than to accidentally light on Shabbos, no question. But that might not make it, all that means is that lighting extra candles is a bonus. It might not be a hiddur bonus, maybe a different bonus of like lighting for, exactly. In any event, says the Beis Halevi, that this machlokas, the Rambam and Tur about bris milah, depends upon whether a person can add in hiddur once the mitzvah is complete. If that's correct, says the Briskerov, he says, based upon my grandfather's fascinating insight, I want to share another insight. Let's say I light the candles first in my family. I light 8 candles. Then I pass off the shamish to my wife. According to the Rambam, that's a bad idea. I should do all 80. According to the Ramah, that's a good idea. Says the Brisker Rav, if you think about it, that question parallels the Bris Mila question, and the Ramah and Rambam actually have the exact same logic that they use by Bris Mila over here, and let me share it with you. According to the Rambam, you can never add in hiddur once you're finished. That's why I don't go back and make improvements to the bris. Once I'm done lighting 8 candles, did I fulfill the most basic level of the mitzvah? Yeah, because it's 1 candle is the most basic. That was level 1. According to the Rambam, when I hand my wife the shamash, what happens? The mitzvah is over. And when the mitzvah is over, is there a potential for hiddur? Not according to the Rambam. And that's why one person should light all 80 candles for the Rambam. This way the action never finishes and you can accomplish the hiddur. Again, according to the Rambam, once you're done lighting, you cannot add in hiddur. You cannot add in hiddur once the mitzvah is done. So if I light first and I'm done, I give the candle to my wife. Once I'm done, the mitzvah is done because the bare minimum, again, level number 1 was just 1 candle. Everything was mahadrim and a mahadrim. And once a person stops their action, you can no longer infuse hiddur. That's the Rambam Lishita. So that's exactly what the Rambam said by Bris Mila. If that's correct, maybe the Ramah is also the exact same thing like he says by Bris Mila. The Ramah argues, just like Bris Mila, when you're done, the Moel can go back and add in as long as it's not on Shabbos. So too by Chanukah, once I'm done lighting, the mitzvah may be complete, but you know what you can add in according to the Ramah after the mitzvah is complete? More hiddur. And therefore I light 8, my wife lights 8, my son lights 8, my daughter, daughter, son, daughter. No. The first night I would light 1, my wife would light 1, the third night I would light 3. But once I light 1 candle, seemingly that's the bare minimum. That's what I do on the airplane, that's the bare minimum. Usually we don't light 1, but if you do 1, everything else after that first is hiddur. Now, once you're done with the action, can you add on hiddur? That's exactly our question. According to the Rambam, no. And that's why one person lights all 80. Or all, depending on the math, you know, all 8 if it's the first night and 10 people or whatever it is. Or all 10, whatever. According to the Ramah, each person could light their own because even after I finish, someone else can add in hiddur afterwards. Let me take a round of questions, make sure that was clear, but we added in 2 big steps over here, 3 big steps. Number 1 is we pointed out the difference between the Rambam and Ramah. According to the Ramah, each person lights their own. According to the Rambam, one lights everything together. Then we explained the machlokes regarding bris milah. Can you add in hiddur afterwards, which was the Rambam and Ramah, according to the Beis Halevi? And then we used that logic and carried it over to the Brisker Rav's case, which was can you add in Hiddur to Chanukah once the mitzvah's done? And it's the same question of can you add in Hiddur by Bris Milah once the mitzvah's done? The question boils down to, can you add in Hiddur after the mitzvah's done? According to the Rambam, the answer is no. According to the Ramah, the answer is yes. And therefore, according to the Ramah, A, you can pass the baton, because once you're done, someone else can add in Hiddur. And B, the Mo'el can come back. But according to the Rambam, the answer is no. The Mo'el cannot go back, nor can you pass the Shamisham, because Hiddur is done. With this in mind, I'll take a quick round of questions, and we'll try our best to get back to the Beis Yosef and the Prima Gadim, which is where we had left off. Me on the Chanukah, me on the airplane, with a Chabadnik walking over with a little screw-in light bulb that has... Not fluorescent bulbs, but incandescent bulbs, which would really be something you can make a bracha on. Could I have made a bracha in such a case? We'll get back to the Beis Yosef and the Prima Gadim momentarily. Quick round of questions. Feel free to, if I need to repeat something, that's legitimate. Also make sure things are clear. One, two, one. Probably you're supposed to, usually we make brachos first and then do the mitzvah, so probably to make sense to light, to make the bracha, then light a candle. Then as you keep lighting the candles, you're still involved, that's halacha l'maaseh. In terms of however, what we're suggesting is you can keep on lighting a second candle, third candle, fourth candle, because that's all in one fell swoop, just like the moel can keep cutting until he takes a break. Once the moel takes a break, once the first person who lights take a break, now comes a great question. Can you add in hiddur afterwards? Machlok is the Rambam and Ramah. So I answered halacha l'maaseh, and then I reviewed what I was saying anyway. Good? Oh, correct. If I would light my candles and then pass it to my wife, she should not make a bracha. According to the Ramah, absolutely. And you see from the Ramah, she's making a bracha on what? What's she making a bracha on? On Hiddur of Chanukah. That's going to be very relevant to our airplane canes, which we'll get to momentarily. Two.
Could you specifically
describe it as you light it first and then the candle first? Yeah, I guess they could. Yeah, I guess, in our family, we do it one at a time. Yeah. I guess.
If everyone
wanted to say that, would it satisfy both? I'm not sure. I probably, as long as one candle is lit one split second before all the other ones, anything after that first candle is going to be hiddur. If you really break, again, if it's literally one time, I don't know, that's possible. I don't know. That'd be worthwhile to think about. But I'd imagine the first one lit, even if it's like, quote unquote, the same time, my kids would never be able to coordinate. As is, we have enough time trying to figure out who goes first and who went second, who went third, and, you know, who wants the bigger candles and the smaller candles, who gets the oil. Like, this is a good 20 minutes of negotiation every single night before, you know, anyhow. Yeah. Yeah. Again, if it's going to blow out, and you know, but that people have these like silver boxes, that's the best would be outside on the opposite wall of the mezuzah. That'd be the best. And then, so let's just try to finalize where this came from. Again, a little bit of halacha l'maaseh, a little bit of the analysis, and try to put it all together. I was sitting there on the airplane. I had lit one flashlight. Did I fulfill the mitzvah? Absolutely. Now a wonderful Chabadnik came, a Chabadsker came over, a chassid of Chabad, and he wanted to help me fulfill what? Hiddur mitzvah. Now, if I light it, would I fulfill Hiddur mitzvah? I would anticipate it should depend upon this question we've been discussing for the last 5-10 minutes already. Can I add in Hiddur after I already finished the mitzvah? According to the Rambam, intuitively, I would say no. Just like by one person lighting all 80 candles at Bris Milah. And intuitively, according to the Ramah, I would think yes. And therefore, should I make another bracha on his opportunity to fulfill Hiddur? I would think the reason why one would say no is along the lines of the Rambam, while the reason one would say yes is along the lines of the Ramah. That having been said, I thought at the time I didn't know all this stuff, and I was a little bit nervous. I said, Suffolk brachos lahakel, I should play it safe. I better not make a bracha, because missing a bracha is not great, but a bracha l'batal is far worse. And what I did was, when they say, when in doubt, leave it out. Sefek brachas lahakel. So I left it out. But that was, I thought that was a fascinating story, and I thought this was the halachic backdrop, everything that's behind the scenes, where the Beis Yosef and where the Prima Gadim are coming from. Do you make a bracha or not? Real boils down to a fascinating question, which takes us throughout most of Hilchas Chanukah, or Hilchas Menorah, Neres Chanukah, and even into Bris Milah, and you kind of see the halachic system tying together and understanding a little bit of where these people are coming from. Why yes, why no? Well, it depends on how you understand Hidr Mitzvah. That determines whether I can add it afterwards, and if I'm adding a bracha on Chanukah, I'd be able to do that even in this case as well. Chodesh Tov and Chanukah Sameach. Thank you very much.